It's a delight for my wife and me to be here with all of you, and I do love hymns, and I was very pleased to hear. I've been in many congregations around the country and around the world through the years, and often when I go in, I wonder, how are they going to sing? Because some are very quiet and reserved, and you hardly hear a peep, and others sing dynamically, and I was very glad to hear what I heard here. Because I could feel a lot of life in the hymns, and they are very meaningful, not only to us, of course, but to God the Father and Jesus Christ. And ever since I was young, ever since I was a little kid, I always loved singing, loved music. My mother actually sang in the choir. She sang alto. And when I was a little kid and I would hear she's singing this harmony or whatever it was called, I didn't know at the time, I wanted to sing it too. So I started singing along with her. I would just imitate what she was doing, and so I learned alto. My father, unfortunately, cannot carry a note in a radio or a paper bag or anything. He had a passion for music. He loved music, but he couldn't carry a tune. And the funny thing was, when my mother and I were singing, standing next to him, he would look at us and he'd say, "You're throwing me off." And she and I would laugh discreetly. But anyway, when I got older, I started singing tenor and then went to bass. But out of respect for my mother, every once in a while I will sing alto of a hymn. I'll be singing that as well. And out of respect for my father, I'll sing off key. So anyway, it was very nice to have that the hymn singing today. I'm very happy to be here with you. We had a wonderful Feast of Tabernacles this year in Hawaii. We were very thrilled to be able to go there. I do serve as a special music coordinator from time to time, and they actually didn't have one for Hawaii, which I could not believe. But I accepted it pretty quickly when they asked if we'd be willing to go. Anyway, it was just a delightful feast and just wonderful to be with brethren, some of whom I had not seen in years. This was, by the way, my 60th Feast of Tabernacles, and I'm only 58 years old. Maybe some of you will figure that out. If not, I'll tell you after services if you're inclined to be interested. But yes, my 60th feast and I'm only 58. Anyway, it is nice to be back from the feast, and I really appreciated the sermonette that we had today, because it is sometimes difficult after the feast, and especially for how long it is until the Passover and the winter and the holidays. And maybe you haven't thought of this in a while or didn't think about it, but it's amazing to me. There are sometimes things hit me, and I think, why didn't I realize that before? But here, a common word in the English language that is used far and wide is holiday. Holiday for Christmas, for Thanksgiving, for Halloween, for Easter, holiday. And the origin of the word holiday is actually holy day. But most don't think that. And though God's holy days have been abandoned and replaced by holidays, that word is still there with its origin and with the meaning that we have been so blessed to know and understand, and also realize that all people will one day learn the same thing. And that's what we look forward to tremendously. Well, throughout our lives, we face all kinds of decisions, don't we? Some are minor, like, am I going to get out of bed today? Well, maybe that's not a minor one. How about, what am I going to wear today? Now, some of you may not think of that as minor, and you know others seemingly do. After getting married to my lovely wife, one day I was dressing for Sabbath services, and I came out of the bathroom or whatever, the closet, and I was feeling basically good to go. And she said, "You're not wearing that today, are you?" And I was just stunned. I thought, how do I handle this? I just said, "No, are you kidding? I just put this on to get a laugh out of you because I knew you seemed a little down today, and I thought, how can I make her laugh? Let's see. How about if I put this outfit on? Maybe that'll get it. And you love it, so that's good. That's great. I'll go back and change. She now picks out all of my clothes. No, she doesn't. But she's trained me. She's trained me better. But anyway, there are a number of decisions that we may think of as minor or that they're not even decisions at all because we're just used to doing the same thing like what we have for breakfast. We might have that as a ritual. How we get to work, the way that we drive to places, it's all routine. And some things are not decisions whatsoever. And also, some decisions may be knee-jerk reactions. You remember that when you used to go into a doctor, maybe some of you do, and they would test your reflexes with a little rubber mallet and hit it against a part of your knee. And sometimes there's a slight reaction, and sometimes there's a big reaction. And sometimes we have knee-jerk reactions that are as if we're not making decisions at all, it's an automatic reaction. That sometimes we wish we had made a better decision than having a knee-jerk reaction instead of just reacting. Other decisions that we make are major, and we make them throughout our lives. And quite a few are important decisions that we need to make in our lives on a daily basis. For instance, what we do or what we avoid doing. Who we deal with and how, or who we may avoid dealing with at certain times altogether. And even relating to what we think, what we dwell on. And that can be a decision and a very important one for us. And what we say or what we don't say. And there are probably a number of other things that are coming to mind as well. What are some of the decisions that you have made recently? And what impact did those decisions have either on your day, maybe the week, the summer, the year, or maybe your life? How do you make decisions? Do you have a certain plan? I need to make a decision, so let me get out my little handy how I make decisions card and go through these steps. And what have you learned so far in life regarding the important responsibility that you and we have been given in making decisions? As you may have guessed by now, this afternoon I would like us to take a look at how to make decisions. Specifically, I'd like to go over several keys related to making decisions. Bad decisions. Poorly made decisions that can impact your own life, if not others, in a negative way. It's something perhaps we don't think about that often, but we need to take a look at least from time to time. Now, I don't have time to go over all the keys to making bad decisions. But I've got good news regarding that because the several that I am going to cover and others that may come to your mind don't all need to be followed. Isn't that handy? To make bad decisions, sometimes you can just use one key and you will be successful. Or you might want to pick out two or three. So we're just going to go over a number of those this afternoon. And just remember that not all have to be followed. Your diligence, though, will be rewarded. The more you focus on using one of these keys to make bad decisions, the more successful you will be. Now, some of you, like me, have learned a number of these that I'll be touching on. And a number will come to mind. And perhaps you can cite personal examples to verify the authenticity of these keys. We'll look into a few biblical examples of them. And perhaps after services, we might want to have some conversations just in case anyone doubts the veracity of any of these key elements to making bad decisions based on personal experience. Or maybe we won't want to. And by the way, you can jot these down if you'd like just to keep them in mind for upcoming opportunities that you might have to use them. That's your decision. You know, you can do whatever you want there. So the first point that I would like to make in making bad decisions, and I'll have points as well as sub-points and maybe you'll have some other things come to mind as well. The first point is make a decision as quickly as possible. Make a decision as quickly as possible. Don't be concerned with getting all the facts. They'll probably just slow you down. Just base your decision on the first things that come to mind. And if there seems to be any confusion or uncertainty, don't let that stop you. Just make a decision, even if it means flipping a coin. Get her done, right? Make the decision. Now, you can always brew on something forever and not make a decision, or you can go back and forth here and there, but that's not the point I'm making today. I'm trying to help you to learn how to make bad decisions. So I'm not going to touch on any of that stumbling or waiting. Make a decision, make it as quickly as possible. The second point I'd like to make is try to fulfill your wants and desires above everything else. Okay, try to fulfill your wants and desires above everything else. My will be done, right? Remember that old song? I did it my way, right? Isn't that good? Avoid taking into account right or wrong, at least as defined by anyone but you. And justify. Reason it out in your mind. You can do it. After all, this is you, right? It's your decision, and you are what really matters. Don't let other people get in the way. And now this is something that I'll just make a point. This is especially important, if I might mention, for husbands and wives to keep in mind, because the spousal units may want to be involved in a decision, and if you're intent on making a bad decision, or at least one that will have negative results, don't include them. Just don't. Don't do that. I was given an opportunity to make a bad decision, and I have to say I was a little bit of a failure at it. I'll just cite, you know, this example. It was 2 years ago. I came home one day, and often when I come home one day, it's been, I love my work. I work in ministerial services. I work in the headquarters office and work with wonderful people and really love the job that I have and all the different variety there is. But you know, sometimes I come home from work and I'm just tuckered out. I don't want to hear anything. You know, I just want to sit down and relax. And one day I came home and my wife's looking at me like there's some problem, you know, like there's some issue. And so I asked her, I said, what's the matter? And we had been having quite a few difficulties health-wise in my family's lives, my father, my mother, and our daughter. And there had been a lot of stress, a lot of difficulties. And anyway, to cut to the chase, my wife said, I heard you volunteered for us to go to India for the feast this year. And I really don't think I can handle it. And she, I don't think she'll mind me saying, it was a very stressful time. She was almost in tears. And I said to her, Marguerite, I did not volunteer for us to go to India for the feast. Do you really think that I would do such a thing without talking to you about it first? I mean, what do you think, I'm stupid? Don't answer that question. I did not volunteer. And if you don't feel we can do that, I'm not going to volunteer. There's just no way. Well, that Passover and first day of Unleavened Bread, we were assigned to go to Alberta, Canada, for Passover and the first Holy Day. And it was really cool, you know, because we were having a little getaway, like coming down here and being with you is. And so we were excited about that trip. The day before I left, Mr. Doug Horchak came into my office and he sat down and he said, Mr. Franks and I were planning the manpower for the Feast of Tabernacles this year, and we're seeing where we have plenty of manpower and where we have holes that need to be filled. And Mr. Franks said, when we got to India, he said, well, Dave's been there before, why don't we ask him? So he said, so what do you think? And I just looked at him, frozen, thinking, okay, there is a need. I am supposed to serve where there is a need, but I don't know that would be, it's going to work out. So I told him, well, I will ask Marguerite, but I don't think we probably will be able to serve in that way this year. I will ask her. I don't know when. I don't know how, but I am going to ask her, and we'll see, you know, what the answer will be. So we're on the plane heading to Alberta, and we're sitting there, you know, on our little getaway, and at a very meaningful time, and seeing brethren that we had met before and knew. And, we're taking off. I looked over at her, gave her a smile. She looked back. She gave me a smile. Thought, this is beautiful, and this is perfect. I said to her, so you like traveling internationally, don't you? She said, yes, I do. I really love going to different places, meeting brethren, being with brethren. I said, yeah, me too. I said, well, you know, there happens to be a need for the Feast of Tabernacles this year, and I was asked if we'd be willing to go. And she said, oh, really? Where is it? I said, India. And she looked at me and she said, oh, are we going? And I almost fell out of my chair. I said, are you kidding? I said, I can't believe you said that. First of all, you said, are we going? And I did not make the decision without consulting with you. And after the last response to that question, I thought we would never go. She said, well, I'm doing better now. That was a tough time. And now I think we could go. So, you know, we did it together. That was an opportunity, in fact, two opportunities to make a terrible decision, and I did not do so in that case, just to share with you. So anyway, again, don't let other people get in the way. But if you can use someone as a stepping stone, you know, to accomplish your goal, what is important to you, go ahead and do that. But don't involve someone in a cooperative type of way. That's going to hurt you in making a bad decision. The next point is only think of the present, not the long term. You know, it's now. Got a decision to make. Now is what is important in making a bad decision, not looking down the road and what might happen. I'll cross whatever bridges whenever I come to them. You know, I'm not even going to think about it now. It's down the line, not important now. Don't worry about the future outcome or your reputation. You know, don't think about that. Is this going to impact my reputation in a negative way? After all, who cares about me other than me when you get right down to it, right? It's my decision, me. Okay, there may be some that I might be trying to impress with this decision, but that's my concern and nobody else's. What happens, happens after all. So do it now, you know, make the decision, see what happens. The next point in how to make a bad decision, trust yourself. Trust yourself. Trust your gut, your instinct. Now, sometimes that can be helpful in making good decisions, but stick with me here. We're focusing on making bad decisions, all right? So if there's any wavering or wondering what somebody else might think or say, just trust yourself. That's the thing to do. Because sometimes you just gotta say, why not? Why not? I know I should probably go to bed. I know it's getting late. But, you know, I want to see one more episode of this. Netflix rocks. And tomorrow's another day. And if I fall asleep right in the middle of it, I can just pick it up right where I left off, you know, because it just, the pause thing. So I'm not going to lose anything. Tomorrow is going to be a better day. I'll just count on that, you know, because now is now. Another example. You know, one more drink is not going to kill me. I know exactly where I am, and I know everything's going to be okay. So, you know, one more. Just trust your gut. Trust your instinct. Those are just a couple simple examples, and I could give others, but perhaps some came to your mind. So sometimes in trusting yourself, you have to say, why not? You know? And other times you just have to say, no way. No way. Like getting out of bed. You know? No way. Not today. Or you can always hit the snooze button one more time. It's not that hard. Okay, how many times have I hit it? Okay, just one more. You know, easy to do. Or how about doing homework? Really? I have study hall tomorrow. And right now I don't feel like it, so it's not really going to matter. Tomorrow I know my friends are there. We get together. We've been in the same situation. But anyway, right now it's just not it. So no way. I'll deal with it, you know, when I have to. Right now, don't think I have to, you know? Or how about focusing on a project at work that you have to get done? But, you know, I needed a break. I'm allowed to take breaks. I got my cup of coffee. I'm playing this game that I really love. And I'm almost to the next level. I've just got to do this now. And actually, I think it's making me more, you know, adept. I really think it's helping me. So right now, they will appreciate this more because they will see the results that when I do this game and get to that next level, I am going to be a better person. You know, and sooner or later, they're going to see that. So, you know, that's another really good thing to do. And in trusting yourself, if things become very emotional, go with your heart. Just go with your heart. If it feels right, it feels right. Right? Am I right or am I right? Or am I right? Right. Everything feels like I should just go with this, so I'm just going to do it. Or avoid doing that, you know, whatever. Just the heart. Trust yourself. Now, some of you, I have to touch on this little tangent here. Some of you might feel you need some input, and that's okay. Some do, and it's totally okay. But if you do feel you need some input, seek it only from peers or people who agree with you and have the same frame of mind. Because otherwise, something's going to get in the way. It is, right? Avoid dealing with older people. They may not agree with you. Is that going to help me make this, you know, that I've kind of almost made, but I just want a little input? They might not want you to experience something that they have been through. Big deal. Stay away from ministers and other leaders in the church because they might be mature, more experienced. Boring. After all, they're wanting to help you avoid making decisions that will have a negative outcome. Again, we're focusing on making bad decisions, aren't we? That's what we're aiming for here. And if you want to make a bad decision, avoid all obstacles. That's what I'm talking about. Don't seek advice from people who are experienced in this area of concern that you might have. Because it's best to learn from your own experience. You know that saying, experience is the best teacher. Doesn't everybody know that? That should be on every wall, you know? And I'm going to keep that in mind. Experience is the best teacher. My experience, thank you very much. And if you've ever had any experience that caused any problems, don't really rely on that, even if somebody brings it up. Because it was probably somebody else's fault or simply circumstances you had no control over. And you want to make this decision, it feels right, remember? Step ahead on that one. And the last point that I would like to make regarding how to make bad decisions, and there are many, many more, you know, maybe some of you would like to share them with me later, that'd be cool. But the last one that I would like to make in how to make a bad decision. Avoid prayer. Because you might feel uncomfortable about doing that. And if you do want to make a bad decision, don't go there. Or if you do feel no, the right thing to do is to pray. Remember, prayer doesn't necessarily include asking God to guide you. You can just share your plans with Him and have confidence that your way is going to reach the desired result. You know, you're just telling Him, sharing Him, this is what I'm going to do. I did it my way. My heart's there. Just keep going forward. So again, we've only looked at a certain number of keys to making bad decisions or decisions that will have bad or negative outcome. Remember, you don't need to follow them all. One or a couple will probably prove successful. You can make it happen. So let's look now at some examples of bad decisions that we find in the Bible and how they relate to some of the keys that we have covered so far. I'm not going to share any personal examples or the reasons for them. I don't want to focus on myself, you know, with my experience with bad decisions. No, there are plenty of them in the Bible, and we need to stick to the Word. So that's what we're going to do. In fact, you know, our own probably don't need to be shared till kingdom come, you know, or the great white throne judgment, when we're actually probably going to be trying to help people learn about bad decisions in a personal way. But that's not where we're going. Let's look at biblical examples of bad decisions. Okay? Some I'm sure have already come to mind. If I asked any come to mind, I'm sure you'd all raise your hands. Let's start here. Lucifer. Lucifer did not agree with God's plan for you and me and where he fit in that plan for us to become eternal sons and daughters of God. And he wasn't going to be at that close, personal, family level. Did he have confidence? Yeah, I think he did. Did he have a solid feeling about who he was and what he could accomplish? I think we'd agree with that. Did he count on his own reasoning? And did he seek to fulfill his desire above all else? Bing! Yep. Let's look at Isaiah 14. Isaiah 14. Because here we see the example of some of the things that he said, his thoughts, in making the decision that he made initially, and other decisions he made afterwards, and is still making today. Isaiah chapter 14, verse 13. Isaiah 14, verse 13. And God is saying here, "For you have said in your heart, I will go up to the heavens. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will also sit on the mount of the congregation in the sides of the north." Verse 14. "I will go up above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High." Confidence. He knew what he was thinking, and he felt very solid about a bad decision. Also, those that we can look to as making bad decisions are those who are called the fallen angels. They followed what they were sold on, convinced of, about themselves, sounded great to them, and they followed the lead. They made that decision. Bad decision. Let's turn to Genesis chapter 3 for another example. Genesis chapter 3. Genesis chapter 3, beginning in verse 1. We see Eve being convinced of what the better thing to do was, and she made a decision accordingly. Genesis chapter 3, verse 1. "Now the serpent was more crafty than any other beast of the field that the Lord God had made. He said to the woman, "Did God actually say you shall not eat of any tree in the garden?" And the woman said to the serpent, "We may eat of the fruit of the trees in the garden, but God said you shall not eat of the fruit of the tree that is in the midst of the garden, neither shall you touch it, lest you die." Verse 4, "But the serpent said to the woman, 'You shall not surely die. For God knows that when you eat of it, your eyes will be opened, and you will be like God, knowing good and evil.'" So verse 6 really outlines the decision-making tactic that was used. Verse 6, "So when the woman saw that the tree was good for food," that's one reason, remember reasoning, "and that it was a delight to the eyes," that's two, "and that the tree was to be desired to make one wise," well, that's three, isn't it? Three reasons. "She took of its fruit and ate, and she also gave some to her husband who was with her, and he ate." And we know that Adam was convinced as well, and we know for both of them, this was a bad decision. Were they convinced that a decision about it was not as important as what they were initially told by God? Did they have logical reasons to help them make the decision? Were the immediate benefits considered, at least those that were presented to them? Yeah. Did they consider all the facts? Did they go back to God to check on things? Nope. Bad decision. Next in Genesis 4. Genesis 4, and we might take a look at this in a way we may not have seen it before, perhaps, maybe not. Genesis chapter 4. This is an important subject to me, and sometimes I get all choked up about it. I don't know what that's going on. Anyway, Genesis chapter 4, verse 1. "Now Adam knew Eve, his wife, and she conceived and bore Cain, saying, 'I have gotten a man with the help of the Lord,'" the meaning of his name, gotten. Verse 2, "And again she bore his brother Abel. Now Abel was a keeper of sheep, and Cain a worker of the ground." Verse 3, "In the course of time, Cain brought to the Lord an offering of the fruit of the ground." Verse 4, "And Abel also brought of the firstborn of his flock and of their fat portions. And the Lord had regard for Abel and his offering." Verse 5, "But for Cain and his offering he had no regard. So Cain was very angry and his face fell." Now, there are not a lot of analyses about this whole subject, but we're looking at the decision, and I think we're going to see it perhaps from a slightly different angle. We know the end of the story, right? A decision was made, an action was taken. They were based on personal feelings. The long-term results were not in mind, but were brought to the front rather quickly, weren't they? The importance of the decision was not taken into account. And the responsibility of the decision was attempted to be avoided. Was prayer involved, do you think, on that decision? Interestingly, though Cain did not go to God, from what we see, we read in verses 6 and 7 that God actually came to Cain due to his initial reaction. Let's look at verse 6. "The Lord said to Cain, 'Why are you angry? And why has your face fallen?'" Verse 7. "If you do well, will you not be accepted? And if you do not do well, sin is crouching at the door. Its desire is for you, but you must rule over it." It's interesting that God was dealing with the present and the future with Cain, not only the past, as if there were no chance of doing well. God didn't say, if you had done well, you wouldn't have been rejected. But he laid out to Cain, if you do well, it wasn't over, will you not be accepted? And if you do not do well, sin is crouching at your door, its desire is for you, but you must rule over it now in the future. Instead of deciding to act in accordance with what he had been told and what we can see offered to him by God, an opportunity, it wasn't over. He was given an opportunity to set things right, but he made the decisions that he did, took the action that he did. Bad decision, bad result. Again, there are quite a few examples of bad decisions being made throughout the Bible. And if any do come to mind, you might want to look at them and examine how they were made. Not just thinking about the results, to give you some more pointers that we may have the opportunity to cover this afternoon. Certain decisions that were made by Abraham, by Sarah, by Lot's wife, by Isaac, by Jacob, Joseph's sons, and when we read them, often we might think, what were you thinking? Or as some like to use commas in questions, what? Were you thinking? But perhaps we can identify with some of the examples that we see when we read them and see how and why the decision was made as it was. Let's look at Exodus 32. I think I'm coming down with an allergy. So far, it's so good because it's just my throat. If I get some action up here, look out. That's all I've got to say. Exodus 32. Exodus 32. And again, we might take a look at this in a slightly different way as well. Exodus 32, verse 1. Now when the people saw that Moses delayed coming down from the mountain, the people gathered together to Aaron and said to him, come, make us gods that shall go before us. For as for this Moses guy, the man who brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we don't know what has become of him. We're not sure about this. Did they say he must be dead? No. They said he had delayed his coming, or it seemed he had delayed it. We don't know what has become of him. That's what they were saying. They didn't know. And that doesn't work. You know, this is just not feeling the way it ought to feel. So we need to make a decision. That's what they decided to do. We're tired of waiting around. It doesn't work for us. Now, there may have been some who weren't sure about it, but they talked about it and agreed. And we don't see that they asked Aaron what he thought, but instead it appears that they just told him their decision as a group, the people together, you know, unity, harmony, told him what to do, and he followed it. He acted accordingly. Were they fulfilling a need that they apparently had? That's what it looks like. Were they basing their decision on information they had previously received? They seemed to be letting that behind. Were they trusting themselves, following their heart? Initially, it seemed awesome. This isn't working. We have a solution. This is what we're going to do. But eventually, it became evident. Bad decision. Again, there are many examples, some of which most likely have come to mind. Moses, with decision and action that actually kept him out of the promised land. Saul, who took matters into his own hands, seeing himself as needing to make a decision. and trusting in his wisdom, stepping forward with it. David, we have examples of David, of Solomon, and examples that he also shared with us. Let's turn to 1 Kings 12, and we'll look at one example that is really tying into one of the points that that I covered a little earlier on how to make bad decisions. 1 Kings chapter 12. 1 Kings chapter 12 will begin in verse 1. 1 Kings 12 and verse 1. The son of Solomon, Rehoboam, went to Shechem, where all Israel had gathered together to make him king. Verse 2, when Jeroboam, son of Nebat, heard of this, he returned from Egypt, for he had fled to Egypt to escape from King Solomon. So he's coming back around. The leaders of Israel summoned him, and Jeroboam and the whole assembly of Israel went to speak with Rehoboam. Verse 4, your father was a hard master. They said, lighten the harsh labor demands and heavy taxes that your father imposed on us, then we will be your loyal subjects. Lighten the burden, and that will mean a lot. Rehoboam replied, give me 3 days to think this over, then come back for my answer. So the people went away. So this was evidently wanting to avoid a bad decision. No knee-jerk reaction, right? But taking some time to come to a solid conclusion. Verse 6. Then King Rehoboam discussed the matter with the older men who had counseled his father, Solomon. What is your advice? He asked. What should I answer these people? Probably did so in a respectful manner. And the older counselors replied in verse 7, if you were willing to be a servant to these people today and give them a favorable answer, they will always be your loyal subjects. He probably didn't sing it, but R-E-S-P-E-C-T, right? Give them some respect. These people have been under a burden. Show them your respect. Show them you care about them, and they will be loyal to you forever. Wow. So these older guys, not just one, says there were several of them, with years of experience, who had worked with Solomon when he was king and had seen the results that his actions had on the people and thus on the whole kingdom, were asked for their advice, and they shared it. Verse 8. But Rehoboam rejected the advice of the older men. Oh, okay. And instead asked the opinion of the young men who had grown up with him and now were his advisors. Remember that? Seek the peers, the people that think the same way you do. It's the way to go, isn't it? Verse 9. What is your advice? He asked them. How should I answer these people who want me to lighten the burdens imposed by my father? The young men replied, this is what you should tell those complainers, those whiners, who want a lighter burden. My little finger is thicker than my father's waist. You think my dad had a tough tummy where you could just say, punch it with all you got? My little finger is tougher than my father's. Yes, my father laid heavy burdens on you, but I'm going to make them even heavier. My father beat you with whips, but I will beat you with scorpions. Verse 12. 3 days later, Jeroboam and all the people returned to hear Rehoboam's decision, and they were probably wondering and waiting and, you know, let's see how this all works out. Just as the king had ordered, give me some time, need to make a decision. But Rehoboam spoke harshly to the people, for he rejected the advice of the older counselor, we're having that repeated to us, and followed the counsel of his younger advisors. Point made. And I'm confident he probably didn't pray about it either. You know, things didn't go well from there forward. Bad decision. We, of course, have examples in the New Testament too, as well as our own histories. And hopefully today, we have been reminded of or have learned some fundamental keys on how to make decisions that can have a very negative impact, not only on our own lives, now and possibly forever, but sometimes, if not often, on the lives of others as well. Family, friends, brethren, people we work with, schoolmates, neighbors, and so on. So if you want to make bad decisions, follow these keys. Remember these examples, any, a few, or all of them, and you will be successful in making bad decisions. But for the rest of you, and just so you know, I haven't reached the halfway point. I felt that. I didn't see it, but I felt it. Let's turn to 1 Corinthians 10. 1 Corinthians 10. Some were probably thinking he's going to turn there sooner or later, but then you kept wondering, didn't you? 1 Corinthians 10. Our God is a merciful God. He is a forgiving God who desires to strengthen us in his way, through his word, through his spirit, and through each other. And we're aware of quite a few examples of bad decision-making processes in the Bible that were learned from, repented of, and changed. And hopefully that's the same impact they have on us as well. If you want to avoid making bad decisions, you'll want to avoid these keys. All of them. Every one of them. Because as mentioned, any one of them or a combination can really bring about poor results. Perhaps not immediately, but probably eventually. 1 Corinthians 10, verse 11. 1 Corinthians 10, verse 11. Now all these things happened to them as examples, and they were written for our admonition that we follow them as best we can. No, that's not what it says, is it? But that we learn from them and avoid making the same unwise mistakes. Upon whom the ends of the ages have come. The results of this world, and who is directing it, who is the God of this world, and is being followed in so many ways instead of God being followed. Verse 12, therefore, let him who thinks he stands take heed, lest he fall. Decisions, 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 bad decisions, good decisions. Let's prepare ourselves even more and be on guard for the future decisions we will make.